Very long. So last week we had a conversation briefly about whether tonight we'd continue with Navi, whether we would do a topic related to Shavuos. I have to admit, I decided to do a topic related to Shavuos. Those of you who are expecting Navi, I will turn around and you could leave and I won't notice if you walk out. But we'll do a topic
related. Next week.
We'll do a topic related to Shavuos. Right, next week we can resume Navi. One of the big issues with respect to Shavuos is that there's a practice that you eat milchiks on Shavuos. And it's a practice that lots of people like. Some Ashkenazi Jews have issues with eating milchiks, so they don't like it as much. But the practice of eating milchiks is a very interesting practice in that it comes from various different sources, as we'll see. There are many different reasons given for the practice, but effectively the practice was pretty widespread. And the reasons might impact on some of the halachic issues that we'll discuss as we go on. I just want to mention at the outset that much of what I'm saying comes from an article by Rabbi Gedalia Oberlander in the journal Ar Yisrael. I actually don't remember which particular volume of the journal it is. I have it somewhere here in my notes. I just don't remember which one offhand. Okay, so the practice is, says the Rambam, in the halachos of Shavuos, that no hagin b'chol makom le'echol macholi cholav b'yom rishon shel Shavuos. Okay, let's pause for a second. The practice is that we eat dairy on the first day of Shavuos. First day as opposed to the second day. There is no practice in the Ramah to eat dairy on the second day of Shavuos. Now, why on earth would that be true? Just before anything, why would it be that the practice is only to eat dairy on the first day rather than the second day of Shavuos?
Once we had the Torah, we knew.
So one could argue that we received the Torah the first day of Shavuos, and the second day of Shavuos is kind of just a second day yontiv, and the practice of eating dairy is all connected to the Torah. And that could be, although usually second day yontiv is a carbon copy, to date myself in terms of what these things are, but is a carbon copy of what the first day of Shavuos is. So why on earth would the practice be to eat dairy only on the first day of Shavuos, not the second day? So it happens that, just as an aside, I saw in the book Gevuras Yitzchak by Rabbi Yitzchak Sorotkin, he's actually, he was a Rosh Hashiva and tells in Wycliffe in Ohio, and then they had like a whole issue in Tells. There was like some politics, so he moved. He started a yeshiva in Lakewood. He's a very fine Talmud Chacham. He must have 30 or 40 really high quality svarim out on the market. So in his work, he argues that it's known from a number of sources that the second day of Shavuos is different than the second day of any other yontif. You see, usually, why do I keep a second day yontif? We don't know which date it is, right? What we call Sfeika Diyoma. That's the standard approach to second day Yom Tov. Shavuos, you can't have a second day Yom Tov because of Sfeika Diyoma for the simple reason that there is no doubt. You see, we already had Pesach,
right?
And people knew when Pesach was, at least in hindsight. And they're counting the days from Pesach, called Sfiras HaOmer, so you know when Shavuos is. So you don't really need a second day.
But maybe
day.
You should have counted from the other day.
But in hindsight, they know. Right? In other words, what's the halacha? The halacha says that they used to have these messengers who would go out, and it would sometimes take them 15 days or so to get to distant parts of Israel to tell them when Rosh Chodesh was. But when all is said and done, they knew when Pesach was, in hindsight at least. And then from that date, they know when Shavuos is, based on counting. So there is really no reason to have a second day Shavuos based on the classical understanding of second day Yontif. But the Rambam tells us, Shelo lechale kamoladim. We don't want the Yomim Tovim to be different. We don't want to say, you know what, you have 2 days of Pesach, 2 days of Sukkot, 1 day Shavuos, you know, like fuzzy math. Right, fuzzy math, that's going to confuse me. So what am I going to do? I will say, oh, you know what? We'll have a second day Shavuos also. But fundamentally, second day Shavuos is different than the second day of Yom Tovim. And to a certain extent, to highlight that difference, Rabbi Sorotkin explains, the minhag that became for many like the defining element of Shavuos, eating milchiks, We only do that the first day of Shavuos, not the second day, to show, to highlight that second day of Shavuos is different. Now, does anyone that you know only eat milchiks on the first day of Shavuos? I think people actually enjoy this practice of eating milchiks, and they eat milchiks both days of Shavuos. Am I the only one that... I think it's pretty standard that they eat milchiks.
I sense that people maybe only eat it at one meal.
So there's some who only eat at one meal, that we'll talk about. But generally, I don't know of a difference between the first day and the second day. But if you read the Ramah, it seems like he's saying first day different than the second day. This, by the way, led to a whole halachic literature years ago. There's a Ksuv in the Chasam Sofer in Siman Kuf Mem Hei about a fellow who was about to die, and his wife would have fallen to Yibum to some evil brother, and it was the second day Shavuos. And some rabbi came up with a heter that maybe they should write a get on second day Shavuos to permit this woman. And this became a cause celeb. And everyone and their uncle is fighting back and forth. Did this rabbi act properly when they permitted the writing of the get on the second day Shavuos? Again, obviously there's major need. Apparently this brother is like a jerk and a half, right? You didn't want this guy to fall to his evil brother. Can you write a get, second day Shavuos? So the Chasam Sofer, an interesting tshuva, has language along the lines of what we're saying. He says, you know what, maybe on the regular second day Yontif, he might permit the writing of a get, perhaps. He moves away from this. He says, even the regular second day Yontif, you can't permit it, but perhaps you could permit on the regular second day Yontif, but second day Shavuos is more stringent than the regular second day Yontif, precisely because of the calculation that we're making. A regular second day Yontif is a question, is a doubt. There's a suffix. Right? So because there's a suffix, so then...
But why have a second day?
The reason we have a second day Yafnev is a special enactment. A second day Shavuos is there because it can't be that you have 2 days Pesach and 2 days Sukkot, but not 2 days Shavuos, so that's why. So again, this is the Chasam Sofer in Siman Kuf Mem Hei. Rabbi Schechter actually has a very nice essay about this in his third Sefer in the Ginas Egos, about that question of writing a get on the second day Shavuos. So that's the first point that we wanted to make. So the practice is that we eat dairy on Shavuos. So far so good? Now, the Ramah writes, V'nira li hatam. In other words, the Ramah says, it seems to me that the reason is... Right? Now, whenever the Ramah says it seems to him that this is the reason, that means that the Ramah is aware of the reasons. Remember, the Ramah is in the tradition of Ashkenaz. It takes Minhag very seriously. And he knew all of the earlier reasons. But the reasons didn't find favor in his eyes. He didn't like those reasons. And we'll try to explain why the Ramah is rejecting the earlier reasons before him. But the Ramah comes up with his own reason, and his reason is Kemo shnei tavshilin shelochem b'leil Pesach, zechol Pesach, zechol Chagiga, kein ochlem machol chalav, v'achar kach machol basar, etc. Utzrichim lohavi imahem shtei lechem ha-shulchan, shehu b'makom ha-mizbeach, v'yesh b'zeh zikaron l'shtei ha-lechem she'yam ha-krivim b'yom ha-bikurim. Explains the Ramah that on Shavuos, they used to bring a carbon called the shtei ha-lechem, two loaves. Now, we want to have commemoration of the two loaves. The way we commemorate the two loaves is you have to have milchiks, because the halach in Yerideya is that when I have a milchik meal, the bread that's on the table with that milchik meal I'm not allowed to use for the fleishiks. And the bread that's on the table and I have fleishiks I can't use for milchiks. So they would need to bring a separate loaf of bread because they have milchiks, and you need what? Bread with that milchiks, because bread is the staple of life. And then after the bread, they would go and eat meat. No? And then they would need another loaf of bread. And by doing that, people can say, oh, whoa, you have two different loaves of bread that you're bringing. That must commemorate something. Shtei halachem, Shavuos, beautiful. Now, what that really means is for the Ramah, the practice is not about dairy, it's about bread. The dairy is a hechatimtza, it's an opportunity to ensure that we're going to have separate breads. But the practice is not about dairy. Right? It's kind of, this is like a real anticlimax. Like, no? Have dairy, and it has nothing to do with the dairy per se, it's all about the bread. That's what the Ramah says.
Tell it to the cheesecake lobby.
Tell it to the cheesecake lobby. It's a very powerful lobby in the Orthodox Jewish world, absolutely.
The
Omer was born on Pesach. The Shtei Lechem is born.
The Shtei Lechem is
The Shtei Alechem, the Omer is from barley, the Shtei Alechem is from wheat, there's like a progression. But the Shtei Alechem is the carbon of Shavuos. To commemorate that carbon, we want two breads. Now, apparently what the Rambam is getting at, I think if I read it correctly, is that you always have two breads on Yontif, Lechem Mishnah, but that's regular. Now I have to remind people that there was a Shtei Alechem, so in order to have that reminder, I would have dairy first. Now, the Magen Avraham quotes a slightly different reason, which I think is also interesting. Hard to explain, but let's learn this Magen Avraham for a minute. Magen Avraham writes, when it comes to Chalav, Yesh harbe ta'amim, there are many different reasons, U'matzati katuv hatam, di'isa b'zohar, she'osan zayin shavuos hayu l'Yisrael, shiva nekiyim, dugmas isha mitaheres minidasa, v'yadua she'dam nekar v'nasa Chalav, b'haynu midin l'rachamim. Whoa. Right? Basically, what the Magen Avraham is saying is like this. That the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos correspond somehow to the 7 days that a woman, the 7 clean days that a Nida has to become pure afterwards. And everybody knows that Dam Ne'ekar V'Na'asa Cholav. Now, this is Talmudic science. Talmudic science tells me that blood becomes milk. And all the blood in the baby somehow comes out as milk. We can't ask any questions because we can't give any answers. So, dam nekar v'na'ase chalav, and hainu midin l'rachamim. And what that is doing is that is transforming din into rachamim, because red represents din, white represents rachamim, etc. But you should be very careful not to come to Yisurim, and therefore you have to, again, have the separate bread, and don't eat Gavina Kasha, don't eat hard cheese, because after hard cheese you have to wait between the hard cheese and the meat, etc., and you should have a separate tablecloth. This is all in the Ramah. This is on the Magen Avraham. Now, the Magen Avraham's idea of Dam Ne'ekar V'Nasa Cholav is a fascinating concept, that there's a certain transformation that is taking place, and milk represents a transformed substance. What's interesting to note is as follows. In the earliest sources that we have, with respect to this practice, there's a few other sources that I could give. The Mishnah Berurah has a source that the Jewish people, right after the Torah was given, couldn't eat meat, because meat requires a long time to prepare, but they could eat the cheese and the milk, because what could be bad with cheese? That's the Mishnah Berurah's explanation. Now, this explanation, by the way, is probably the earliest source of eating dairy out. Mm. No? He says, what could be wrong with cheese? Cheese can also be non-kosher, no? It's unbelievable. Isn't that the Mishnah Berurah's explanation over here? He says, yeah, you know, after the Torah is given, they have none to eat because, you know, you have to shech the bison or something and salt it and get it ready, but cheese and milk, that you could have. Right? And again, I think many of the poskim like ask this question on the Mishnah Berurah, but the fact is, these are the classic sources on the page in Shulchan Aruch, as it were. The Rambam's idea of the Shtei HaLechem, the Magen Avraham's idea of representing somehow the purification of a nida, and the Mishnah Berurah's idea that milk is inherently kosher as opposed to the meat. In the earliest sources, though, in the Rishonim who discuss the practice of eating dairy on Shavuos, they don't only speak about dairy. Here, let's look at the Kolbo. Okay? The Kolbo, I tell you who the author is. He's apparently Reb Aaron ben Yaakov HaKohen of Narbonne, 1306, expelled from France. So this is a 13th century halachic work. And the practice is Gam Nahagu Lecho Devash V'Chalav. Right, the pasuk in Shir HaShirim says that Torah is compared to honey and to milk. Right now, that's one idea. So there's some symbolism of honey and milk that is represented, and we also see in some of the other sources that they would use honey on Shavuos, but the earliest source has honey and milk. Now, let's just pause for a minute. Honey and milk are two interesting substances, because as a matter of halacha, both honey and milk are controversial whether they are kosher. We have a principle in halacha that yotze min hatame is tame. Anything that leaves a non-kosher animal is non-kosher. No? I don't want to... Right? Anything that leaves a non-kosher animal is assumed to be non-kosher. Correct? Honey comes from bees. Are bees kosher? The survey says you're wrong. Right? Honey, non-kosher. Milk. Does milk come from a kosher animal? Well, kind of, sort of, a little bit. But milk is coming from a cow. A cow is a kosher animal. A goat is a kosher animal. But... No. I milk animals when they are alive. Is a live animal kosher? My live cow, not kosher. Eiver min hachai, no? So shouldn't my milk be treif based on yotzei min hatamei? Right, the halacha is I'm only allowed to eat substances that come from kosher animals. Milk is coming from an animal that's non-kosher because right now, Elsie is treif. Behema b'chaya b'cheskes Israel medes.
They're confusing that with Eiver min hachai, which is a different thing.
But the fact is, when the animal's alive, is the animal kosher? It's not kosher. So anything that leaves a non-kosher animal...
It's potentially kosher.
What?
It's potentially kosher.
But it's potentially kosher. It's not kosher yet.
But you're not
that kosher.
You're not knocking a piece of it.
It's not in that kosher.
You're not pulling out an arm or a leg or something.
I'm not pulling out an arm or a leg, but at the same time, right, it's yotzei min hatame. The halacha is that something that leaves a non-kosher... Something that leaves a substance I can't eat, itself is not kosher. Now, this, by the way, is not my question. Bechoros daf dalet, the Gemara asks the question about why is honey kosher, why is milk kosher? And the Gemara answers that we have psukim to tell me that these things are kosher. Right? The pasuk says, Eretz zavat chalav udvash. Wow. Now, this is a funny Gemara, because Eretz zavat chalav udvash, the type of honey in that pasuk is dvash tmarim, date honey, no? It's not bee honey, but the Gemara is using it to show that dvash devorim, that even bee honey is kosher. And chalav has to be kosher, but the Gemara is saying that how would God praise Eretz Yisrael as being the land flowing with milk and honey if milk and honey are not kosher? So obviously they're kosher. Well, whoa. So now what we see is perhaps it's not just that honey and milk are sweet. First of all, milk is not particularly sweet, no? Milk is not particularly sweet, but honey is, milk isn't. So how come, like, this idea of honey and milk, it could be that what we're emphasizing is the power of Torah to take ideas that, or take things that would seem to be non-kosher and make it kosher. That's one notion. But I want to say a little bit more, and this is a point that my chavrusa from a few years ago, Shai Schechter, made to me. Shai pointed out that we saw the source in the Magen Avraham, that dam ne'ekar v'naseh chalav, that blood becomes milk. Now, if blood becomes milk, shouldn't milk be treif because milk is blood and blood is treif? The answer is that there is what we would call transubstantiation if you're a Catholic, or if you are if you're into Harry Potter, there's some other terms that they use when one substance changes to another. So blood becomes milk and it's going to be kosher. And honey, the halacha says, honey also has a certain transformative property. The Rishonim are bothered by a question as follows, which is the way honey used to be made. Today, all of our honey is usually cooked, and in the cooking process, they purify it and they remove the bee parts from the honey. But if you've ever had real natural honey, there are pieces of bee inside the honey. No? It's kind of gross. You're eating insects. Shouldn't it be treif? So the Rishonim ask this kasha. So Tosfos says in one place in Avodah Zarah that you're not really eating the insect itself, you're only eating the legs of the insect, and who says the legs of insects are treif? I don't want to go into the details, it's totally gross. But Tosfos says you're eating the ragli devorim, not the devorim itself, and ragli devorim are okay. That's a Tosfos in Avodah Zarah. But Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachos has a fascinating idea. Rabbeinu Yonah says that, you know what, the reason why honey is kosher is because honey has the ability to transform items that stay in the honey for a while to become honey themselves. Honey we know is kosher, there's a pasuk. And the bee parts that are stuck in the honey become honey. So therefore they are kosher also.
Is that an actual physical
bio? Haven't gotten the foggiest idea.
I think they're
making this up. I haven't gotten the foggiest idea. I'm just telling you Rabbi Yonah says in Parakeet Samavarchim. This is a discussion about musk in the Rishonim. Musk is usually used as a fragrance. Now, musk comes from some blood of a creature that is excreted.
I think it's from some gland.
But it should be non-kosher because the animal isn't kosher. So most often musk is used to smell. The question is, if I'd want to eat musk, would I be able to do so? So in that context, Rabbi Yonah says, oh, there's a real transformation, and therefore it's going to be okay, like the honey transforms the bee part. Now, one could argue that maybe this is the lesson of Dvash and Chalav. The lesson might be as follows, that Torah has the ability, Shavuos is a holiday of Torah, that's our assumption, and Torah has the ability to transform things, to transform us. Ilav hahu yoma kama yose yika b'shuka. I would just be an ordinary truck driver, or an ordinary kid who is being pummeled all the time until Muhammad Ali comes to save my life, whatever it is.
But like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
That's right. I have to state for the record, by the way, that my mother says that she remembers at this breakfast meeting that Muhammad Ali also offered to come to my school and to beat up the kids who were hitting on me. I don't remember this part, but my mother was like all upset after I wrote this. How come I didn't quote the best part of the story? I'm like, Ma, I don't remember. The napkin, I remember. I just don't remember this part. I was a little kid, but obviously
my mother claimed that.
should have added that to the article. But the fact is, there is a transformative ability that Torah has, and maybe the lesson of Dvash and Chalav should be the transformative ability. Now, the fascinating thing is like this. In the earliest sources, in the Kobo, the practice is Dvash and Chalav. There's also another practice that they had in the Kobo that fell away, which is, the Kobo continues, V'nahagu b'chol Yisrael gam kein lasum b'matza zafrin v'hatam l'fishem sameach halev, that they would put some saffron on their matzah on Shavuos, and saffron makes happy. Now, let's think about this for a second. Matzah on Shavuos with saffron. There was a practice among Jews to eat matzah on Shavuos. Because Shavuos, like the Ramban tells us in Chumash, is the end of like a Chol HaMoed period from Pesach. It's like the last yontif of the Pesach. What? It's that Atzeres of Pesach, right? Exactly. And that last show of Pesach involves eating matzah. But we want to eat tasty matzah, apparently because 7-week-old matzah is probably not particularly tasty. So you dip that matzah in saffron, and that makes you happy.
It's very expensive.
Fine.
Maybe it wasn't back in the day.
Now, in other sources that we have, other early sources that we have of this practice on Shavuos, in the Leket Yosher, by the way, came from here. I give it to you. Rabbi Yosef ben Moshe, born in 1423 in Hochstadt, Bavaria. Right, he's a student of the Maharil, etc. So he's really part of the whole Minhag Ashkenaz thing. So he writes on the first day of Shavuos, they eat pladin and dagen hametuganim v'chema. Now, pladin, apparently, was some dairy, it's like, what one of these things that they sell in the pizza store? Calzone. It's like a calzone, right? That there's like some cheesy stuff, and they also ate fish that is fried in butter. Then they'd rinse out their hands, and then they would eat meat. Right? That's what you see in the Leket Yosher. Which means that by the time the Leket Yosher is coming around, the honey is not part of the practice of Shavuos. Only the dairy products is. Then in the Sefer Rokeach, is known for being part of the Hasidei Ashkenaz tradition. The Sefer Rokeach says that the practice is that minhag avosenu shemoshivin tinokos lomo b'shvuos l'fi shenitna b'Torah. This is a beautiful idea. In certain Hasidic communities, they still have the practice that when the kid goes to school for the first time, they make a whole procession and they take the kid to cheder for the first time. Actually, Rabbi Gavriel Tzinner has a whole volume about minhagim that were done the first time you take a kid to cheder. And the minhag was in the rokeach that they would begin teaching kids. The cheder would open up. What's the first day of school? On Shavuos. Shavuos is the first day of school. And what they would do is they would bring a luach, they'd bring like a board, and they write Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Daled, Tav, Shin, Resh, Kuf, etc. And they'd write all these psukim, Torah Tzivul on the Moshe, Torah Te'amun Asi, right? The psukim by Yikra on Moshe. The practice was that little children would begin studying Chumash with Vayikra, and the teacher would teach them every letter from the Aleph Beis, and the kids would answer. V'nosin ahaluach ma'at devash v'lochech hanar ha'devash ala osios b'lshono. What they would do is that they're teaching the letters and they put some honey on, again, the sanitary aspects of this we don't want to comment on, but they put honey on this, like, board, and the kids would lick up the honey as they learned the letters.
That's also a minhag at an upsharon.
There's a minhag at an upsharon, which is probably based on this. I remember as a kid, actually, my grandfather, the first time I learned a little bit of Aleph Beis, gave me some honey. Right? This is a very old practice. It goes back all the way. But they would do honey. Now, what's interesting is that we see, and this is something that Gedalia Oberlander makes in his book, a certain pitzol, a certain split of the minhag. The minhag originally was devash v'chalav on Shavuos. And then the pitzol within this minhag developed that the chalav part is on Shavuos, and the devash part is today when the kid begins to learn, right, chumash. Even though the beginning of the learning chumash was done on Shavuos. Right? But the minhag, again, minhagim evolve. Okay, I hope I don't get fired for saying this, but there is certain evolution in minhagim. And the minhag evolved, and it split, etc., into different parts. Now, effectively, we have many different reasons for this practice. The practice, it would seem to me like it would make much more sense if I'd be inventing a minhag to focus more on the devash than the cholov on Shavuos, but somehow the cholov seems to have remained and the devash fell away. I think that's interesting in its own right. Now, one of the questions that comes up, and time is getting a little bit late, so I don't know whether we'll go into this in detail. One of the questions that comes up is, how can you have a minhag to eat dairy on Shavuos? On Yom Tov, you're supposed to eat meat. Because there's a mitzvah simchas Yom Tov, and ein simcha ela bebasar, right? The Gemara in Pesachim, right? Tanya, here, two lines into the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, when the Beis HaMikdash was alive, there was only simcha bebasar. Now, the Gemara says that when there was a Beis HaMikdash, the way you would enjoy a yontif what is with meat. After the Beis HaMikdash, you would have wine. The Beis Yosef understands that what this Gemara means is that after the Beis HaMikdash, you don't need to eat meat on yontif anymore. There is never a mitzvah to eat meat because meat is good. There's a mitzvah to eat meat because meat is carbon, and carbon is a mitzvah to eat. Therefore, according to Beis Yosef, for Yom Tov, all you need is wine, not meat. And therefore, there would be zero problem having dairy on Shavuos, because you don't need meat. Right? However, when you look at the history of the minhag over here, the Ramah's whole talk about the two breads is telling us that, you know what, they would have dairy and then meat. Right? You get the impression that no one is dispensing with meat on Shavuos. Now, the Maharshal never accepted anything that the Beis Yosef said. Maharshal was a cousin of the Ramah, unlike the Ramah, who accepted the Shulchan Aruch as binding. That's why he wrote notes on the Shulchan Aruch. Maharshal wrote his own books, which are based on his methodology of learning, which is that you take the Gemara and you analyze it, and then you write the halacha at the end. The Maharshal says that he thinks the correct understanding of the Gemara is that after the Beis HaMikdash, you need both meat and wine on Yom Tov.
Yeah.
And it would seem that on a certain level, the Maharshal won, because at least the minhagim at this time were that people were eating meat on Shavuos also. Our practice today seems to have developed that people only are eating dairy on Shavuos, right? Or people split and they have one meal meat, one meal dairy. Now, if you're going to split, it would seem that the Ramah's practice is that the dairy is representative of the Shtei HaLechem, so therefore the dairy should be during the day rather than at night. The Mishnah Berurah's idea that, well, after the Torah is given, they have nothing to eat, so therefore they had to eat dairy, whatever that means, that would also imply that the dairy should be eaten during the day. The Torah was given in the day time, no? So it would seem that the better practice would be to have meat at night and dairy during the day if you're splitting. For some reason, if you look in some of the biographies of various Gedolim, this is a point that Rabbi Simon makes in his Imre Baruch HaMinhagim, in the biography of the Stipler in the Chazon Ish, it says that they would eat dairy at night and meat during the day. Right? That seems to be a reversal based on the reason behind the minhag. However, if I take a Simchas Yom Tov approach, so then the halacha, the Gemara in Sukkah says that there's no real mitzvah simcha at night, at least the first night of Yontiv. Simcha is a mitzvah during the day. If that's the case, then dairy at night and meat during the day makes more sense. Because, right, if assuming that there's no joy in eating dairy, I know Seinfeld has a line that there's no joy in eating salad, right? But that's a different story. Okay. Yeah.
My observation, a lot of people, they have a big deal out of having something dairy, but it's not for the entire full meal.
Right, so many people today try to divide up. Again, the shul obviously is assuming that we don't have dairy at all the four meals, hence we are having a barbecue on the second day of Shavuos. Again, I happen to try to have first of all some dairy and then some meat at lunchtime. That's the approach I personally try to follow. But any approach has something to rely on. The interesting thing to me is the fact that the honey part of the minhag fell into disuse. I personally would like the honey minhag to come back. It's so sweet. It's so zeez. Like, you know, bring the honey back. But what can we do? Right, everyone knows that Shavuos you eat balunzes, right? And that's the standard
have
practice.
Have it with mead.
Huh?
Have it with mead.
Meat balunzes.
Mead.
Ooh.
It's a drink. It's an alcoholic drink that's made from honey.
I know mead. Yeah. Apparently, at the funerary of the Emperor Charlemagne, they excavated his grave and they found the amount of beer and mead that they drank at his funeral seuda, which was just unbelievable, the amount that they had. But that's neither here nor there. But okay, so basically, this is the point I wanted to make with respect to eating dairy or meat on Shavuos, and we should have a good Yontiv, and thank you for coming.